Going to tell you a little bit about two interesting research directions, I think, that I'm working in, but also other people in medical image analysis. And they involve, as the title suggests, cats and crowds. So we've already seen quite a lot of different medical imaging applications today. And in general, we see that there's many different questions we would like to ask for a particular type of image. So for example, we might want to ask what is the diagnosis of the entire image, or we might want to detect some abnormalities, we just want to know their locations, or we might want to segment a more accurate structure to be able to measure it. Like in this case, in the chest CT image, maybe measure the airways, or I think we've also seen the prostate today and a few others. And if we would like to apply machine learning algorithms to do these tasks for us, we would like to ideally have the same type of labels. So if we want to diagnose, we want to have scans which have a diagnosis attached. If we want to detect abnormalities, we want to have outlines of those abnormalities and so forth. And perhaps also not a surprise, often we don't have these kind of labels for various reasons. It might be difficult to acquire, not done in clinical practice, and it's too much overhead for the radiologist to do, privacy reasons, or maybe there is some labeled data, but it's from a very different population or a very different scanner. So although there's all this talk of nice and big data, and you think it might be all right there for you, so you can just pick whatever data set you need, the reality of the data set for your training that you have might be quite different. That if you take the representative and annotated data, it's actually quite limited. And what you then get if you are looking at your performance of your neural network or a different method, it's a function of the training size of your data set. The complex method that you might want to use, that you've been seeing state-of-the-art results on, if you have too little data, perhaps that method will not perform so well because it will overfit on your limited data set that you have. So, for example, maybe in computer vision, we have data sets which allow us to use such models. For example, with cats, with millions of images. For medical images, we might have a different case somewhere over here, where although the data sets are increasing in size, they're still not at the same scale as in computer vision. So here's an example of what might happen then. I see I'm missing the reference, but I will fix that in the final version of the slides. Here they trained a model for classifying skin lesions as benign or melanoma or a different type of skin cancer. And although the network is quite good at distinguishing images that come from the same type of set, and those sets are actually quite large for medical image standards, when the network encounters images with markings that the dermatologist has put for reference, it can completely change behavior, and although a dermatologist herself would not see it that way. But no reason to panic. There's various approaches in machine learning to try to help this problem. We've just seen some nice examples of semi-supervised learning and transfer learning, and I'm going to concentrate on two things, a specific type of transfer learning and crowdsourcing in my talk. And I'll jump right next to transfer learning. The idea is for your model not to learn from scratch. So whereas before we assumed we just have one data set for a particular model, and then for data set A, we train model A. For data set B, we train model B. We now try to do something similar as happens with our own learning. So when you, for example, you decide to play hockey for the first time, but you've played soccer before, you don't start learning hockey completely from scratch, because some dynamics of team playing and like moving ahead and trying to evade other players, those will still apply even though the rules and other specifics might be slightly different. Traditionally, the self-transfer learning was done on other similar data sets. So what I mentioned, for example, data sets from different hospitals. These are four data sets I used in a study of classifying COPD, which is a lung disease, from the chest CT scans like I've shown before. And these are quite small data sets with a few hundred scans, each of them. And as you see, they have quite different populations in terms of how severe the disease is, whether the people smoke or not, and also how the subjects are scanned. What happens is you might be lucky and your data sets are suitable for learning and transferring the knowledge, but often you will see that performance actually degrades across data sets. So here I have three of the data sets as training, and then testing those models on the four different data sets. On the diagonal, the things are going quite okay, but as soon as we train on this one and test on a different one, you see that the performances go down quite a bit. This is with texture features and a simple classifier. But there's also a recent example with these chest X-ray data sets that were just mentioned by one of the speakers. So there are three data sets with X-rays and 14 diseases. And in the study, the authors, they indeed trained on each of them and then tested on the same. And you can see that when the data set is the same, the performance is the highest, and it can drop quite a lot if you go to a different data set. Even though visually we don't really see that it's like a very different contrast or so. Rather than learning from these kind of related data sets, which you might or might not have, you could also actually nowadays learn from any type of data set. And this has become quite popular in recent years. And in particular, I think this ImageNet data set is used a lot. I think it's used so much that often papers even fail to mention that it has happened, because it's just quite a standard thing. But if you haven't heard of it, this is a data set with 1,000 object classes of all sorts of things like cats and dogs and ships, with more than 1 million images, and 1,000 categories in total. And what you can do is you can take this data set, train some network on it, and later when you want to reuse it, so to be able to somehow get the knowledge out of it, you take the lower layers, which have basically learned how to combine the pixels in the image into more meaningful structures. And you just take that knowledge and put it into your own network, which you can either train further or use the representation directly in some kind of different classifier. And this is just to show this you don't need to, if you're using ImageNet, you don't need to do yourself. You can just import already the trained model, so you basically start from this point. And I think this is part of the reason it's also so spread today. So I think it was in approximately 2014 when the first application of doing it like this, learning on ImageNet and then doing a medical task, appeared. And I think people were quite surprised, because it didn't make sense. Like, how can it be that you're training to recognize dogs and cats and ships, but in the end you're doing something with brain tumors and it works? And you'd also see some papers that will be testing a hypothesis like, well, we think maybe it's better to take some medical data, perhaps not the same kind of data, not from a different scanner, but maybe we take a different application because it's more similar to what we want. So in this case, for example, say you have this skin classification problem. Your sources could be something like ImageNet or some other medical imaging problem, for example, retina classification. So I kept on seeing these papers which were either surprised that ImageNet was doing well, or they were surprised, they were testing this hypothesis and actually finding that the medical data set was better. So I decided to round them up and see what they're all saying, which gave birth to a paper, Cats or CAT Scans. This is my proudest achievement of my career. And what did the paper say? Well, unfortunately, there were not really a lot of papers because it's actually so common to just transfer from ImageNet that there is often no comparison to doing something else. But from the papers I could find, five papers concluded that the medical data was best. Three said that the non-medical was best, and this was either ImageNet or some kind of texture data set, like with leaves and sand and images like this. Two explicitly said that there was no difference. And three others, I think from their experiments, you couldn't really conclude one of these answers. But what they did show is that more data wasn't necessarily better. So, for example, they used several medical data sets and the ensemble of them as pre-training wasn't a better thing to do than just taking one that was the most suitable. Of course, this was interesting to see, but also it was difficult to compare because the people used different types of target data, different types of source data. Also, they did the transfer in a different way, like only doing a few layers or all the layers. And so forth. So we wanted to look at a more systematic comparison of transfer and see how different data sets fare. And here we had different target data sets and as source data sets for training. We had ImageNet, Retina, Cat, Dog, which is basically a subset of ImageNet, but only with cats and dogs. Some chest images and some other natural imagery. And these are the scores averaged over several target data sets. So what we found indeed that ImageNet was outperforming the others. However, it was also much larger than the others. So still I think we need to see what the results would be like if the budget of the training is the same. So I arrived now at my second strategy, crowdsourcing. Who has heard of crowdsourcing before? That's quite a few people. And who has participated in crowdsourcing? Okay. So I think I saw maybe five people who participated in crowdsourcing. I think I would disagree because probably you have all done it. If you've ever tagged people and objects on social media, or if you clicked on parts of a street sign to log into somewhere, so then you were actually labeling data for a driverless car algorithm someday. And in this case, it's data for face recognition. And in fact, well, this is crowdsourcing is how ImageNet was made possible with more than 1 million images. So in 2009, it was released. And how these labels were acquired is that, I think the web was crawled for different kind of images. And they were presented to people on this platform, Mechanical Turk, where you can set up some task, like, describe what you see in this picture. and well, different people from around the world then do the task, get paid a couple of cents per image, and you typically repeat a task maybe 10 or 20 times to get a consensus, and this way you can get a data set with refined labels. And for perhaps categories like we have an ImageNet, perhaps it makes sense because everybody can label a car or a cat or a dog, but it might be surprising to think of crowdsourcing in a medical imaging context. However, a few years later after ImageNet, I think the first medical application appeared, and this was in 2012 with malaria diagnosis. And this was actually a game where you had a tutorial and then you had to diagnose these kind of images as being blood cells which were infected by malaria or not. And it turned out that that the crowd was very good at this task, within 1% of the expert. So after this, more and more studies appeared with different types of applications. So a couple of examples. We have surgical instrument segmentation. So here you see surgical image, and then this instrument needs to be segmented. Then cell pattern classification. Basically, there are different types of cells that you can see, and the players are classifying them into a category. Actually, in this study, they did not do it through Mechanical Turk, but they had an online game where you could be like a wizard or a warrior or something, so like World of Warcraft, but different. And then to get gold, to like in the game buy yourself some weapons and things, you could instead of paying like with real money, you could do this labeling for a little bit, then go back and then continue with your game. So they got, I think, like a million people to join in this classifying effort. Some other examples, classifying images as mitosis or non-mitosis. Also with these kind of images, we've seen segmentation papers. Well, if you're not comfortable for humans to label your data, it's also possible to do with pigeons. So what they did here was keep pigeons on a calorie restricted diet like this, and the pigeon would basically see the image and then click the, I mean, it would always like peck at this window, and if it would peck at the correct label, it would get fed. And after 2 weeks of doing this, they were able to classify benign versus malignant, which to me is baffling because I cannot see the patterns myself. Okay, but assuming you'd like to stay with humans, inspired by all of this, I did a study on the airways I mentioned before, because I thought that a segmentation task might be more easy to explain than a diagnosis. And this worked reasonably well if the people followed the instructions of outlining the airway and the airway wall, which is like the ground truth data that we had. So actually 2/3 of the people, I think, thought I was interested in detecting the airways. So they were clicking the airways, but not doing like a nice outline. An example I worked on more recently, and I'd like to zoom in a bit more on, is this melanoma classification. And some properties that experts use to look at when doing a diagnosis are asymmetry of the lesion, the border irregularity, and color. So if the lesion is healthy, it's usually symmetric, roundish, and the color is quite quite regular. And how I actually got into this project is that I was teaching an image analysis project for first year students. And I thought that these skin lesion images made nice examples of extracting features from images. Because you could imagine that you can measure how regular the border is, you can do some clustering on the colors, and so forth. So their assignment was to measure several features with algorithms, but also to measure these features by themselves, to have some kind of comparison, since the ground truth I have is only if it's healthy or melanoma. Perhaps it's more interesting to measure, like, okay, do we find, does our algorithm indeed find that the lesion is asymmetric? But after actually I did this project with several students, I realized that I had quite interesting data to look at, because I suddenly had these visual characteristics assessed by students of biomedical engineering. So not with medical knowledge, but maybe a semi-expert. So what we looked at was seeing if we could actually use their measurements of asymmetry, color, and border, if we could use those measurements to predict whether the lesion was healthy or not. And it turned out that we could do this actually quite well. So for 100 images that were measured by one group of students, so there were six students, and each of them measured five features, so 30 features in total. Like with a linear classifier, we can predict the diagnosis quite well, and even better if we average across the annotators. So this was pretty cool in the sense that you could see that there is some signal there, that there's definitely this asymmetry can be assessed without some expertise and can be useful for diagnosis. But of course, it's not so useful if you would think about applying something like this in real life, because then you would, for a new lesion, first need to get it assessed. You need to get the assessments of asymmetry and so forth. Because in here I'm using these characteristics as an input, right? So for classification, I would need that same input. So instead, we looked at whether we could use these kind of characteristics on the output side and train a network, because then for a test image we don't need to have these measurements to predict the label. So we compared two networks. The network is exactly the same, except in the end the baseline network just has the single output, which is melanoma or not melanoma, and then we compare it to a multitask network, which, next to predicting melanoma or not melanoma, it actually tries to predict these asymmetry, border, and color ratings. And it turns out that actually that adds quite a lot of signal to the network. So here I have the AUC, and this is what the classification network does, and the multitask network is quite a bit higher than that. So this multitask component, I think it adds different information and regularizes the network to look at not only individual pixels or combination of pixels, but more at the overall appearance. Well, there are quite a few more applications. Recently, with the whole team of people, we tried to summarize what has been done in this, and the next two or three slides are some conclusions from what I've learned from the studies I showed you and from the survey. So one thing we looked at was how often were different applications used, and we saw that it was much more often 2D images and rating an entire image rather than segmenting something, and we suspect that this is because of if you want to put something on a website and have people annotate it, it's much easier to do it if the image is 2D already, because if you have a 3D image, you need to either build your own interface or you need to split it up into 2D images. So there's problems there. And same for like the annotating part. Mechanical Turk allows you some kinds of annotations which make sense for, you know, cars and street signs, like bounding boxes or just an outline. If you want something more specific, you cannot really do that. So we compared actually the distribution of different applications to a different survey where I was also involved in on semi-supervised learning and a deep learning survey. And although the two of us are quite similar, actually these crowdsourcing studies are heavily biased towards these 2D images. And of course, well, this is, I think, more frequently something we see in many disciplines, but almost all papers report successes. So we don't really hear about the cases that the crowd couldn't actually do the task, and then the paper never got published. And I think there's lots of valuable information there. So perhaps these images which were too difficult, like breast, maybe people tried and we just didn't find out about it. Another thing that was missing is that actually, despite this being quite a new way to label images, often the details of the setup, like we put it there and we asked people to do this and we paid them this much, often those details are missing. So if you would even want to reconstruct the procedure and do it for your own data, you're missing the information. An interesting thing to see, and I think a good thing, is that people use the labels in a different way. So some people only collected them and compared them to experts and said, okay, the crowd is good enough. But also sometimes people saw that the crowd wasn't really comparable to experts, but if you would train machine learning using those labels or use them somehow to refine your algorithm, maybe actually then it would be okay. Improving or filtering labels was in general something we could see more often because it assumes a bit less expertise. For example, like assessing the image quality, like assessing the noise levels and such. And also, for example, the crowd turned out to be good at discovering novel patterns that maybe the machine learning algorithm and like the experts didn't know about were in a data set. Again, on the future investigation side, I think people don't really discuss the implications of this. So say we get the crowd to label datasets, and then our algorithms are trained on such datasets. Like, what does that mean if they made a mistake and the algorithm was trained to do something stupid? But on the other hand, I mean, the same is now happening also for self-driving cars, which we are all training together, and also ImageNet, which is and CATS, which are being used to train all sorts of algorithms, it seems. I think that's all I wanted to say. So I talked about two approaches to increase the amount of labeled data. One via transfer learning, where you could train your models on very different data sets than the data set you're interested in. So there are many successes, but it's not so clear yet, I think, what the factors are affecting that success. And the second one was crowdsourcing, where we're collecting labels from a crowd without medical expertise for different tasks. Also there, we want to know better what makes it successful and what is the best way to use those labels, if at all. Thank you for your attention. People are up for coffee now. Yes.
So you mentioned something about 3D data being particularly difficult, but are there people making efforts to do 3D, to work with 3D data?
There were some studies. I think it's solved in three different ways, roughly. One is playing a movie, which you can stop. But then it means, you know, you cannot freely navigate in the image. Making some kind of rendering and sort of also making a movie. And possibly, I think you could make your own interface, giving the user freedom to navigate. But I think most people don't have the expertise in house to like build this and deploy it. Yeah.
I was just curious. What is your opinion on sort of like managed service providers such as Scale AI that provide some sort of like crowdsourcing service where they have an API where you send the data, and then their algorithm takes the first stab at labeling it, after which it's sent to like a source of, or like a crowd of workers. Do you have any experience in using those sorts of services? Or?
No, not personally. I have to get funding first, and then I can. Yeah, I think if it works for your application, go for it. But it's the same thing that it becomes like really hidden. Who labeled it and why is it successful? So you don't know then if you got your data, you trained your system, and things go wrong. It's more difficult, I think, to debug like what kind of labeling mistakes maybe caused that. So I think it depends on your end goal. If you do it in Mechanical Turk, it will just be coordinates on the image. So I think it's not really freehand drawing.
What resolution?
I don't know. Let's say if your images are 500 by 500, it's recorded in those coordinates. Oh. So it depends on how the image you supply. What I did with the Airways, that was with a custom interface, and I had a sort of ellipse tool. And that was just the center and the, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. We are just again.